Views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
See Live Off the Record with Trivago Lang is brought to you by Central Bank, City of Hope, Duracell, Pindertal, Prince Masters, RF Banking Trust, Raw Star Assurance, Southwest Plaza, Star General, Insurance Made Simple, and Sun Oil Limited.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Trivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. The budget process is continuing, and we are continuing to listen to both sides of the debate about what is happening with the country's finances now and planned for. And so we are happy to have with us today the chairman of the Free National Movement, the former member of parliament for Elizabeth and former minister of health and distinguished surgeon in the country. We have with us Dr. Dwayne Sands, former minister of health also. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure. A pleasure to have you. I want to ask you a question first, because I really want to put this to you first. I assume you've been following the budget. Obviously, none of us gets to watch everything, but I imagine you're following it, listening up to what has been said by both sides, your side, the governing side. Are there any positives that you can speak to arising out of the proposed budget?
I think it's obvious that there are some positive things in any budget. And it would be disingenuous for us to suggest that every single thing that the government says, plans, moving forward is problematic. That's clearly not the case. And even in the exchange on, as the leader was speaking yesterday, you would have seen the minister with responsibility for the public service get up. And on his feet, the leader of the opposition would have complimented the government on a planned program. And this is not an exaggeration. When you are listening to 2 weeks of self-congratulations and you're talking about something as serious as the choices that this administration is making, then it is challenging amongst all of the self-congratulations and public relations and political spin to find a whole lot of meat on which to honestly congratulate this administration. Sadly, I think the decision to make this just a big public relations pre-election blitz has backfired. And, the people haven't gotten beyond the whole, we got a balanced budget. Matter of fact, we got a surplus when the numbers don't make sense, okay? Because the numbers that the government has come up with a $500 million in new debt, it's very hard. So Yeah, there were some moments where I think the government deserves some congratulations, but they were few and far between.
So you pretty much, from your statement just now, you regard this as an electioneering budget?
This was a pork barrel politicking election year budget. There was something in it for everybody. We can give some jobs, we can give some pay increases, we can give them some contracts, we can build an airport, we can build a hospital, we can build another hospital. I have no idea where the money can come from, okay? A lot of groundbreaking.
But isn't that a good for everybody?
Again, the if it were possible, if it was reasonable, if it was real, then, you know, sure. But, you know, and I don't mean to be pejorative. The old people say a promise is a comfort to a fool, okay? So here we are now going into year four. September will make year four. And there's a lot of promises about these billions of dollars of investments that's coming out of the ground. And few of them have actually taken any roots. And so, you know, the public is being asked to believe the spin, the promises, et cetera. We haven't done it yet, but vote for us again, and we will definitely do it this time.
So you hold the view that this is a budget put together with offerings for expenditure over the next 12 months that simply is unlikely to be done, and that the government probably knows that?
I believe that this administration recognizes that their performance over the last 4 years has been less than stellar, and that they have to sweeten the pot in order to convince a jaded electorate. If you ask the point blank question that you just put to me, I don't believe that they will be able to do half of the things that they promised, just as they have not done a half of the things that they promised to do in this term.
Does that include producing a first surplus budget for the Bahamas?
I do not believe it is going to happen. And that is even with the approach that has been taken by this administration to cut checks, and I'm speaking metaphorically now, and leave them in the drawer, okay? In one sector alone, I can say with absolute certainty, based on verifiable information, that there are vendors that are owed millions of dollars by this administration. And it has been for an extended period of time, to the point where some vendors in the health sector have had credit in order to remain in business. You know, we have spoken about the challenge and the example of ambulances is a very important example. If this administration is so flush, so awash with money, why is it that they are unable, by the admission of the managing director of the Public Hospital Authority, to keep the vehicles maintained and on the road? Not my words, hers. They cannot keep the vehicles maintained and on the road. So when you have a situation where in New Providence, and having been the inaugural director of the emergency medical services in the Bahamas, I can tell you a little bit about the protocols that we created for ambulances in New Providence. And there is never a circumstance where one or two ambulances is either safe or reasonable in New Providence. There is absolutely no way that this ought to be considered acceptable. So when this administration says they're going to come up with a surplus, Well, clearly you're going to come up with a surplus because you're not paying your bills and you're cooking the books. And while I acknowledge the fact that our accounting system, our national accounting system, allows for accounting for debt only when it is paid. So we don't have, you're the economist, I'm not. So we don't measure these things at the time the debt is accrued. It's on a modified cash basis. And so you can say, oh yeah, we're doing very well. It's great, but you got $200, $300, $400, $500 million in unpaid debt, current debt. And you can make it look however you want until July the 1st, and then you pay $500 million worth of bills.
Do you think you were in the former administration, from your own observation and assessment of things, do you think that the situation of the government, let's start with cash flow as in I have people to pay and I can't pay them. Do you think that the government situation today is better, worse, same as it was under your tenure? And give us, let's take account of there's part of that tenure that was pre-Dorian, pre-pandemic, and then there's part that was Dorian pandemic.
So, again, you're asking for a level of honesty in conversation. And successive governments have had challenges with cash flow, including the administration in which I served. Okay. And so if you look at committed expenditure, oftentimes there isn't a whole lot of headroom. And there was not a whole lot of headroom during that administration. And there were some serious challenges meeting expenses, both in the pre-Dorian period and definitely in the post-Dorian period, and certainly during the pandemic, right? Now, when there has not been a pandemic or a major natural disaster, and the economy of the world has come out of the doldrums, albeit in a somewhat muted fashion, there ought to be an expectation that some of these challenges shouldn't exist or ought not exist. But if you are spending money at a clip faster than you are earning it, or that you're collecting it, the revenue, then you are going to worsen your cash flow challenges. And I believe that this administration's spending for PET programs has eclipsed their ability to get revenue, and they have an insatiable revenue. So when they say that we've collected more money than has ever been collected in the history of the Bahamas, I believe them.
Mm-hmm.
But they have also spent more money than has ever been spent. And And, you know, I'm afraid to say there is very little that we have to show for it.
Well, no, yes, you could see it. There has to be things show for it.
Mr. Lang,
let's look at some things now. Let's look at some things. There's some new schools.
Which new school are we talking about?
I'm asking you, man. You are my guest. I'm asking you.
You know, I look at West.
No, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious now. I'm dead serious. Are there any new schools?
I believe that the school in Ragged Island has reopened. Okay. Other than that, no.
Okay. Any new?
They have broken ground on a number of clinics and
renovating. No, I'm talking about constructed. I'm talking about constructed, completed clinics.
No, I am not aware. There are two outside of the Rand Memorial Hospital and outside of Princess Margaret Hospital. There are some modular facilities, both of which are shuttered and not used. So in terms of clinics that have been completed during this term, I am not aware of any.
Okay. Any government buildings? Government buildings? Any government buildings anywhere on any island?
Well, you know, we opened the government building in West End, eh?
That right thing, Bill, that was under construction now from under Mr. Christie.
Right. So I'm trying to be as frank, as honest, and as clear than that. You know, the only government buildings that have been completed were private sector facilities that have been leased and occupied by the government.
Okay. Any major infrastructure, bridge, docks, road installation improvement?
We've had some road works. There's been a number of roads that have been resurfaced. Hawkins Hill was resurfaced right outside my office. Bay Street has been redone about 3 or 4 times. You know, so a number of a village road was redone. East Bay Street was resurfaced about 2 or 3 times. So yes, there have been some roads, and certainly in the Family Islands, there has been some road work done.
Airport.
The resurfacing of the main runway at LPIA was completed, I believe, about 3 or 4 months ago.
But that would have gone to the charge of NARE, not to the account of the government.
Again, you know, we're trying to be as honest and inclusive as possible. There are no new airports. Certainly, there's no new airport in Exuma, none in North Eleuthera, and certainly none in Grand Bahama, and certainly none in Long Island.
New programs.
Yes. So we have the feeding program. Feeding program, and I think that they deserve kudos for that program.
Yeah. But beyond the feeding program, no new program you could identify that could account for. The government is now spending in excess of $3 billion on an annual basis, about $300-400 million in capital expenditure.
So we have a shelter in Abaco that has not been completed. And so had they been focused and completed that, that could have been an accomplishment. We have an accident emergency department at Princess Margaret Hospital that has languished for the last 6 years, still not completed. Had they focused on that, they would have had an opportunity to point to that as an accomplishment. The kitchen at the Princess Margaret Hospital is shuttered, closed, derelict. Okay? So they talk about the clinic or the phased hospital in Grand Bahama, nowhere near completed. So sadly, in Grand Bahama, not done. There's a lot of things that are on the way, and but when you look at the expenditure and the tax collected, oftentimes with very aggressive tactics, this administration finds itself having to say, boy, you know, we revolutionizing the energy sector, right? And the public is supposed to believe that they're going to feel and touch and taste something better. But quite frankly, there's very little that they can point to. And even as we sit here trying to rack our brains to ask what have they accomplished, there's very little, very, very little.
Now, mind you, there are some expenditure might be made that might not be quite visible to the naked eye. For instance, I know the Ministry of Education is engaged with a study at the University of the Bahamas in terms of trying to determine the factors affecting learning outcomes. And so that won't show up now yet as a visible something, but it is a significant study to be done. Now, whether there are some more of those kinds of things, I mean, I can't myself identify, but maybe you know of some of those kinds of things happening.
So Lang, you know, I think when you have these kinds of discussions, it is appropriate to try and be honest and fair and balanced. I'm struggling to identify a programmatic success administration. And that, okay, yes, you can say, well, but Vietnam, you're supposed to say that. Yeah, but I'm also a Bahamian. I would like this country to do well. I would like the people of this country to do well. And as I rack my brain, I have a hard time identifying any infrastructural success that they've had. You know,
if it were manifest, and I thought you missed it, I would myself say so. I would. For instance, I know the government has talked about doing the Golden Yoke program that's supposed to increase egg production. But the truth of the matter is, that is, if it's a work in progress, it's a work in progress that hasn't produced any eggs, as far as I'm aware, to date. So, but I know that there's talk about that to be done. And I know of any number of, the government will speak of signing various union agreements as accomplishments, but those agreements rarely manifest in anything that the public will rejoice about. Maybe union personnel may rejoice about, because it might mean more benefits, compensation for them. So, you know, so as a package, then people mightn't be able to identify so remote, so it's so much with them. I think the government talks about having raised minimum wage. So those people for whom minimum wage meant an increase in salary, if the employer kept them working at the same level, would also say, okay, that was a benefit to me. The government reduced VAT on a large number across many items from 12% to 10%. And so, you know, I asked people on the show whether they felt any benefit from it, but maybe circumstances didn't permit them to do so, but the government did, in fact, lower VAT. And so, so there are things which the government has done, and maybe the benefits accrue to segments of the society. But if I could see that thing there, and almost everybody's feeling it, or lots of people are feeling it, then I would call you out and I'd say so, if I thought you missed it.
And I think that is what intellectual honesty should be about, that you give credit where credit is due, and you attack on the basis of their public performance, their policies, their legislative accomplishments. So
we have to go to a break, and when we come back, we continue this conversation. But I have something to ask you, just so. So we'll come right back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm here with Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement. We're talking about the government's budget. We'll be back after this break.
Are you looking to save for a big purchase or occasion? Do you want your money to start making money for you? Well, let me introduce myself. My name is Bond, the Bahamas Government Savings Bond. I am guaranteed to earn interest on your money with terms ranging from 1 to 6 years. Government savings bonds are available to all Bahamians, and for as little as $100, you can start to save for your future. The Bahamas Government Saving Bond, a safe investment guaranteed. Check out the Central Bank of the Bahamas website for details.
Get ready to catch the thrill and win with Shell. Fuel up with $20 or more and unlock your shot at unforgettable prizes.
We're talking regatta trips to Exuma and Harbor Island.
Free fuel, grocery vouchers, water park passes, and more. Just snap your receipt and WhatsApp it to us at 242-422-0271. The vibes are high, the prizes are hot, and the summer is yours to win with Shell. Only at participating Shell stations in Nassau, now through August 22nd. Terms and conditions apply.
You work hard, you do your best, but sometimes a little extra support can make all the difference. At Fidelity, we offer personal loans to help with whatever financial challenges life brings. We offer quick, hassle-free, stress-free loans ready whenever you need it. Inquire and make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Be ready with Duracell. Be ready when the power goes out this hurricane season with Duracell, the battery that lasts up to 10 times longer. Purchase your Duracell batteries at your local neighborhood stores, service stations, and all major retailers. Duracell, distributed by ACH Pritchard Limited. So, be ready with Duracell.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad you could join us today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we're speaking with the chairman of the Free National Movement, Dr. Dwayne Sands, and we're talking about the budget. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316. The island's 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Dr. Sands, if somebody asks me, Shivago, name me some manifest things that were done by the Ingram administration between 1992 and 2002, I'd be able to talk about the privatization, the liberalization of the airwaves. I could talk about the change in the licensing process, because that was a manifest change for people. I could talk about
huge.
I could talk about the economy's growth over that period, which was the longest sustained period of economic growth in our history, driving unemployment down from 14% to 7.something%, and then Grand Bahama for less than that, 6.9%. I could talk about a fiscal deficit on average around 1% for an entire 9 month year or so stretch. I could talk about the significant infrastructural developments that were done in the Family Islands and those kinds of things. If I went to an Ingram era, the most recent Ingram era, in the midst of the Great Recession, I could talk about all the countercyclical things that were done to help stave off the worst, the 52-week job program, the jump starter program. I could talk about the infrastructure, the massive program, road improvement, waterworks, and these kinds of things. I could talk about those things. Now, mind you, in the end, they don't always result in your getting staying in power, but I could at least identify those things. You were asked about what those kinds of things happening in this period of time under this administration. Can you point to any such thing under the Minnis administration of which you were part for a bit?
I think the Minnis administration's strengths included the phenomenal support that was rendered to a number of civil servants and families when the world's economy had basically shut down. And I don't believe an exaggeration, but I'll say a single civil servant lost their job or had a reduction in their income. And that was a phenomenal accomplishment. We watched protection and evacuation of an entire island community during a storm. We watched the strengthening of the e-platform in business and the elimination of a lot of the headache and the centralization of documentation across the various agencies of government. We saw a situation where at least through 2019, but we saw the concept and then ultimately the opening of the cruise port in downtown New Providence. And that is a direct consequence of the efforts of the Minnis administration and has become a cornerstone of the commercial or economic success of this administration, who took great exception to our decision to allow the redevelopment of a cruise port, which is, I think, the fourth or fifth largest cruise port in the world. That's just a few. We would have been very intentional in terms of solving the problem with the fire at the New Providence landfill. If you remember the horrible experience that our tourists and Bahamians were having with it, and nobody can say with any meaningful sincerity that that wasn't a massive accomplishment of the administration.
Okay? I agree with that. It was a huge problem for Nassau, its residents, and so forth, and it was a problem pretty much solved.
And has remained solved.
Yeah, yeah. You also had in that period of time, you don't talk about it, but if I'm not mistaken, you probably had the most massive expansion in subvention to the University of the Bahamas in that period.
So when you look at the social contributions, the access to higher education became almost an entitlement for our young people under the Minnis administration, and whether that's at UBI. So, you know,
I think, because as I said, if you had missed something out in this administration, I would have called you and said so. And I did point to some things you did not mention. But similarly, under the Minnis administration, you had, you probably had one of the best periods of no load shedding, lower fuel cost than you had in decades and many, many years at EPL.
So in the energy sector, okay, and people could criticize about the Station A at Clifton. We not only did we remediate the oil spill at Clifton, okay, if you remember, your ships were coming in, people were swimming, and they were getting treated that problem. But you also saw the creation of Station A with brand new stations that ended the load shedding that people were experiencing for years under the previous administration. And this is also during a period when the Minnis-led administration opted to manage the fiscal affairs of this country with a level of, I don't want to say, other than conservatism. I mean, we counted those pennies to make sure that the people of the Bahamas were getting value for money and that the money wasn't being wasted. So, you know, the then Minister of Finance, Peter Turnquest, made sure that the Bahamian people could point to any expenditure of their money and say that, okay, yeah, the money is going for a reasonable cause. It's not being wasted. There was a streamline in terms of expenditure on vehicles from cabinet ministers and government officials, etc. You know, they drove a blue plate and a red plate, and they might have had an extra car, and they could gas them up at the public's expense, and that was cut out under that administration. You choose. You either have one or the other, but you ain't getting both. And sadly, that behavior has come back, where the public is on the hook for excessive expenditure, wasteful expenditure by senior government officials and ministers. So, you know, there's a lot that people can point to that they can say, yes, this happened under this particular administration. This happened during this time. You talk about legacy. This PLP likes to talk about the Pendleton administration and the establishment of the Defense Force, and they started national insurance and so on and so forth. What had you done?
Well, let's look at this also, though. The fiscal situation in the country is better. Okay, by whatever metric you want to measure, the deficit is down, the rate of growth of the national debt is down, and yes, you could look at the pandemic and Dorian, but the fact of the matter is they are both down, and then you know the unemployment rate is down. That's according to the Bahamas National Statistical Institute. The economy. Its growth is slower, that is true, but that is understandable in the context of an economy being turned up from the pandemic, even though the PLP itself does not like to acknowledge that reality. As an economist, I am acknowledging that there is context to the fact that we had a significant recovery taking place prior to election. And the economy has slowed significantly since that. It's still growing, but slowed in its growth since that time. Understandably so, recognizably, etc. But the fact of the matter is, it is an economy still growing, at least according to the BNSI, last year's real growth, 3.4%, it was actually significant growth in real terms. So there are those things. Now, as to the experience of Bahamians in the context of that, the fact of the matter is those things are true that I just said.
And Bahamians are asking the question, under, you know, in the Egyptian days, they had 7 years of feast and 7 years of famine. You know, how did you perform given the circumstances that were dealt? So in the former Menace administration, if that's the one that we're looking at, we know that, you know, by 2019, we had a massive natural disaster by way of Dorian, and then an international world-changing pandemic, right? And so, you know, how did you perform despite that? Bahamians are looking on and saying, okay, so you don't have those kinds of headwinds, and yet our economy is not performing even as well as our peers in the region. So that if you look at average GDP growth in the region, the Bahamas is underperforming. If you look at stopover visitors comparing the Bahamas to peers in the region, other countries in the region have shown year over year increases in their stopover visitors. We have seen a drop off in our stopover visitors.
And okay? that may well be true. You know, I don't myself try to compare country by country simply because countries have different structures in their economy that makes them grow differently, so that a commodity-based economy might grow differently in a given time than a service-based economy. And some of our economies in the region are commodity-based economies. But to your point, I look at the economy's growth in terms of the experience of the citizens of the economy and what is happening with them, whether they are seeing material changes in their employment circumstances, in their wages circumstances, in their indebtedness circumstances, in their profitability circumstances, if you are a enterprise and so forth. And on the basis of that happening in other people's economies, your economy is performing either well or not so well.
So let's limit this discussion to the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And try to determine what is anecdotal and what is objective. An anecdotal assessment would be that based on the challenges with the cost of living, the cost of food, the challenges with electricity and energy, that there's certainly a cost of living crisis in the Bahamas, or it's very difficult. And that is manifest by the number of people who are seeking assistance. And I objectify that statement by comments made in his presentation by the minister.
But the prime minister said there's a cost of living crisis in the country. He said that himself.
Right. So when you ask, is the average Bahamian feeling this phenomenal growth, this booming economy? I'm sorry, I don't believe that they are.
Well, you know, but the prime minister himself said that he knew that not everyone, and there were people who weren't feeling it. So he acknowledged that. But you know, and I try to on Z Live, I try to educate people. So here's what is true for me also. There's a difference between presiding over an economic set of circumstances, and facilitating a set of circumstances. So let me give you the difference. This economy could grow, or it happens in the world, and you had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Okay. So that could happen. Or the economy could grow because you had something to do with it. For instance, you could have growth generated by investments you went across the world and brought back here. Right? You could do that. You could have reductions in the cost of some items to people. Like, you could reduce the tax on fuel, and that could lower the tax on fuel. And I could say you did that. And so what I find too often is our dialogue, and this is this is on all sides, is not necessarily tied to, okay, this is why things aren't good because you did this, or this is why things are good because we did this, and have it be credible. I hear stuff being said, but it's just talk. It's not evidential. It's not supported. And so when you look at the economy, can you tie the government's hand to something negative that's happening, or the government's hand to something positive that's happening?
So I think that we can tie the government's hand to the increase in public sector debt since June of 2024, because it is the decisions made... Yep. By the government of the Bahamas,
yes,
that determines the rate of growth or the rate of regression of public sector debt. Yes. And so when we see that the central government debt in 12 months since June of 2024 has risen by $402 million at the feet of the government of the Bahamas, okay? When we ask the questions of, you know, what did you do in order to strengthen the public's confidence in the management of the economy? And we ask whether or not you have adhered to either your or the former administration's legislative guidelines for transparency and accountability. We can say categorically that this administration has failed.
Okay.
And one very good example of that was brought up just yesterday by the leader of the opposition when he talked about a company on the register. I think it's Carmichael. I don't remember exactly. Awarded a contract by the government of the Bahamas in 2022, and there's no file in the Registrar General's office.
Doc, can I ask you to hold that thought, because we are way past our break point. I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Let me come back. You can pick the point back up. Ladies and gentlemen, You're listening to Z-Live. We're going to take a break for news. We'll be back after the news break. Together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Thank you. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Gary's Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we're speaking with Dr. Dwayne Sands, the chairman of the Free National Movement, and talking about the budget, really. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720, or you can text us on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Doc, you had started a talk. We had to go to break, so you can continue.
So, you know, I was talking about a challenge with the whole question of, you know, here's an economy that's thriving and, you know, it ought to be undergirded by a level of transparency and accountability, that the people have confidence that their money is going to the right place. And so when the leader of the opposition raised this question about this Carmichael Village Project Development Company and $10 million of our money going to that company with no directors, not on the registrar general's list, it raises the question. It raises the question as to why this administration hasn't funded freedom of information, and why this administration has decided to award almost $400 million in no-bid contracts when they were supposed to send those contracts out for tender. And so, you know, it allows for a conversation that, you know, we used to say, where the VAT money gone? Well, people now asking, where all this money going? Because in absence of transparency and accountability, it opens the door for speculation. Okay? And when you don't have anything that you can...
Except though, I know where the money's going. I mean, like, honestly. I mean, I know sometimes kind of sarcastically that talks, but we know where the money's going. We may not like where it's going. We might not like how it's going, but... There's no broad issue of monies being lost here. For instance, maybe there's a big contract that's going to be awarded to somebody to do road, and that's where the money can go. We know that to be the case. And so, I mean, where the money went, the VAT money went, we know where the VAT money went. It went to the Consolidated Fund.
Right. So, you know, when Bahamians, you know, struggling, and Bahamians love their country, but they want to know that their hard-earned tax money is doing something for the development of the country, okay?
Right.
They want to look at it, they want to touch it, they want to take people to take pictures in front of it, and so on, right? So when you go to arguably the heart and soul of New Providence, or possibly even the Bahamas, which is downtown Bay Street. And this administration started off with a bang, right? They're going to tear down these derelict buildings, we're going to beautify this area, etc. Downtown Nassau is a dump. It's an absolute dump.
Oh, much of it is not appealing. I don't know if you traveled, but yes, I know you traveled to the Family Islands recently, because I met you in the airport. You ever see the entrance to the domestic section of the airport?
It's bad. Okay, it's bad. So when we look in Grand Bahama, and everybody is hoping and praying for Grand Bahama to get a breakthrough, they want to see some things happening in Grand Bahama, and sadly, there hasn't been anything that we could really point to
out of the ground. But Ginger Moxie, the minister for Grand Bahama, I thought gave quite a detailed account of what is happening there. She talked about the Celebration Key that's happening. And I can tell you, Celebration Key is a big deal. Celebration Key, who are really celebrating it, because I've heard them. I've heard them talk to me or their own mother. I'm talking about ordinary Bahamians now, young men who will catch and ride to go work down there. So that's happening down there.
It's being developed, but it has not yet come on stream. Apart from
no, but the construction you get during the process of development, just like anything else, we always say there's construction jobs during the development phase, and then you have other things that come on after it's done. So we have to acknowledge that that is actually happening, and hundreds of the of folks are down there.
But you know, when we the metaphoric golden goose for Grand Bahama is our Lucaya, okay? The Grand Lucayan property.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
In the debate, there was far too unclear about where that deal currently stands, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A simple question was put, and that is, have the funds from the sale of the property made their way to the treasury, okay? And we couldn't get a straight answer. When the question was asked, when will the money make its way to the treasury? We can't get a straight answer. And so when you look now at the airport not being redeveloped in Grand Bahama, when you look at the airport not being developed in Exuma, in North Eleuthera, it's you know, people in all of these different communities keep asking, show me something, let me feel something that we can point to say that our government has been a good steward. You know, the master gave all of the servants a set of talents, and some went and put it in the ground and bought it back, and some went and worked those talents to get some more. Well, the Bahamian people want to know that this administration has been hard at work on their behalf, and they could come back and give a report and say, we did this, we did this, we did that, we did the next thing. And that is sorely lacking right now. And that is the problem that this administration has. They ain't got nothing to show.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I get confused. I make a couple of things that I want to ask you about, but I get confused actually about something that I notice about the government's touting of things happening in Grand Bahama. The government touts that $3+ billion worth of investments are happening in, and the port also touts that $2+ billion on the port site as something they have been able to see happening in Grand Bahama. Celebration Key, I happen to know, preceded the current administration. And in fact, the dialogue about it preceded even the Minister administration. So I happen to know that to be true. But what I find curious about it, and maybe you could speak to it, is on the one hand, the government castigated the Port Authority for doing nothing. Yet the $3 billion worth of projects taking place are happening in the Freeport area and are projects being and have been licensed by the port. They are not taking place in East Grand Bahama or West Grand Bahama. So I don't understand how at one and the same time the government says the port is doing nothing and then touts projects that are happening in the port area, which the government cannot say, we flew to this place, talked to those people, and brought them here. We flew to this place, talked to those people, and brought them here. Not to my knowledge. Are you aware of any direct connection with the government and anything that's happening in the Freeport area?
No, I am not. I wish that that we could point to something because, you know, I'm married to somebody from Grand Bahama, eh? And, you know, I spend 2 days a month in Grand Bahama operating at the Rand. So I know firsthand the challenges that the long-suffering people of Grand Bahama experience. Unfortunately, this love-hate relationship between this administration, I'm sorry to say, not been very helpful. We saw a very public, I'm trying to use a palatable word, match verbal sparring between the port and the government. And I don't think that has helped matters much, even as, people point to, okay, well, this is happening and this investment is going on and so forth. But the relationship is so caustic, it is so toxic right now that sadly, Grand Bahama, Grand Bahamians are not having a maximum benefit from collaboration between the parties, the players, the Port Authority, the government, and the people. And very, very unfortunate. I'm hoping that can change.
Go ahead.
I'm hoping that can change. Uh-huh. Okay? Because
it has been useless. I have a text that says celebration is great, but that is an F&M deal and no airport. And so somebody sent me a statement here. I'm not sure who the statement is from. So several months ago, the government executed an MOU with a consortium comprising the Manchester Airport Group. I am advised that as a part of the Grand Lucayan deal, design adjustments were required to be made to the overall footprint of the terminal building. These adjustments are underway, and we anticipate vertical construction to begin soon. The overall master plan, as I outlined, inclusive of the resort, port, the Lucaya marketplace, the casino, the marina, of course, along what will position Grand Bahama to continue its growth as the fastest growing island in air arrivals into the meridian. The long term, we are building GB not just for today, but creating a sustainable economy for the long term. This was said in the House of Assembly by Minister Ginger Moxie. As a matter of fact, Grand Bahama's air arrival is up, and it's probably up because a fair number of people are coming into Grand Bahama to work on that Celebration Key project. I happen to know that for a fact. If you're a landlord in Grand Bahama, you know that there's a lot of requests being made by people who are attached to that project over the short or medium term.
So let's speak about, you know, some of these things. And I don't mean to be excessively critical, but you made reference with other economies and so on and so forth. One of the reasons why you can say that Grand Bahama's airlift is increasing more rapidly than any other is because the total level of airlift in Grand Bahama started off pretty low. So if I go from 2 flights a day to 8 flights a day or four,
including that somebody points out Western Air is now linked to Fort Lauderdale.
Right. So when you look at that, that's meteoric growth. But compared to, Exuma or to Abaco or certainly to LPIA, it pales. And it certainly is not as much as Grand Bahama needs. And especially when you're talking about international airlift. The second thing is that there are some bases in Grand Bahama that for some reason they have stalled. I speak about the medical school development in Freeport, okay? And this should have been, I was the minister when that was agreed, and that build out should be much further along than it is. And for some reason it has stalled. And you ask the question, why has it stalled? It seems as if the necessary assistance, support from central government and whatever other agencies are necessary could do more to get that thing completed so that we get tens, if not hundreds of people into grandma apartments or homes to start patronizing businesses and so on and so forth. This is low-hanging fruit.
But you know, this is the second time around we are, if that is true what you say, that we are messing up that way. Because
yes.
when
don't forget
when,
Ross was
University
there before.
Was here, Ross University suffered for the same reason, lack of support.
I don't know why it is. Here you have the potential. You look at Grenada, and their medical school brings in more foreign currency than any other enterprise, any other business in the country. Okay? The growth potential is phenomenal. So why we're not seeking to grow this even out of other opportunities is beyond me.
Well, maybe some of the answer, maybe some of the answer written in your profession. Let me tell you why I say that. You know, Ross University almost didn't land in Grand Bahama. Because there were doctors who were making the case that if the people who studied at Ross University medical program in Grand Bahama, when they were finished, would not be allowed or not be able to or eligible to work, qualified to work in the Bahamas. And to my notion, I said, well, that don't make no sense because they ain't trying to work in the Bahamas. They're trying to work in the United States of America, whose government is funding the people tuition. Why am I concerned about what they do when they finish if they won't do it here? So sometimes we have these backward thinking that kill us.
And I think we need to recognize that many of these things that we imagine are not connected are very connected. So let's look at the shipyard. Has, I think, a $600 million project that's ongoing, right? But the challenges with airlift into Grand Bahama is making it very challenging to keep that project going. I have that from a very reliable source, okay?
Mm.
And so when you talk about the billions of dollars in the ground and what might be done in order to make sure that comes to fruition to benefit the people of Grand Bahama and by extension, the people of the Bahamas, having a good working relationship that's non-toxic, that gets people to understand so that a rising tide raises everybody's boat, okay? And sadly, I don't think that is happening for Grand Bahama.
We're going to take a break, but I want to ask you to turn your attention to this. As I listened to the leader of the opposition, I noticed something. I noticed that not only was he criticizing the government for what it had done or had not done, but I noticed he put a number of policy and intentional positions forward as to what his administration would do. When we come back, I want to ask you to turn your attention to you're saying all these things these people ain't doing, what would you all do? Can we go to that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Look
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shafar Willang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Let me know that you all up if you feel like you can't proclaim the same road.
Southwest Plaza has so many stores, I've been trying to find a sensible way to list them all. There's CBS Bahamas, the Ashai Institute, BENC Snack World, Bamboo Shack Bahamas, there, the Athlete's Foot, NBTC, Games and More, John Bullfine, Threads Alive, Bahari, Dairy Queen, 700 Wines and Spirits, Sandy's, Clarkson Island Luck, Starbucks and Lowe's Pharmacy, plus Marco's Pizza and Lorraine. Southwest Plaza, what a wide array of stores. Southwest Plaza, stop by today and explore.
You work hard, you do your best, but sometimes a little extra support can make all the difference. At Fidelity, we offer personal loans to help with whatever financial challenges life brings. We offer quick, hassle-free, stress-free loans ready whenever you need it. Inquire and make that move today.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Cancer Treatment Centers of America is now City of Hope, creating one of the leading cancer care and research networks from coast to coast, providing more of what you need. More locations means more care closer to home. More specialists means more expertise. More research means more breakthroughs. More advancements means more treatment options. And more options means more hope. Learn more at cancercenter.com.
Winning on the court, just like investing, is about consistency and having the right partner. With RF's Advantage Plus brokerage account, you get exclusive access to high return securities, some yielding up to 7%, plus expert investment guidance. No need to chase every opportunity. We deliver priority trading, exclusive investments, and the lowest commissions. So you can look for an RF Advantage Plus brokerage account today at rfgroup.com. RF Bank and Trust. Money at work.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this Thursday afternoon, where we're speaking with the chairman of the Free National Movement, former member of Health, and one of our distinguished surgeons in the country. Dr. Dwayne Sands is with us, and we were talking about the budget and the government's performance so far. Doc, before I get to the question I said we would get to, I want to ask you, I want to read some text some people have and then ask you about something else. So this person says, the UB-BTPI tuition grant was noteworthy. Could you imagine students having to find funds during the pandemic? It would have been chaos, along with the BPL rate reduction bond, a noteworthy accomplishment, says that texter. This text says, Mr. Lang, can you ask Dr. Sands to give opinion as to why the hospital is not finished?
I have been watching that project, and I think, unfortunately, this has been an issue of funding to the contractor. And the contractor has simply not been able to be funded to at the rate and consistently to complete the program.
But the government is projecting a surplus next year. The government is projecting a 0.4% GFS deficit this year. The government says that revenue has exceeded expectations, it will meet its target. So how is funding an issue for something critical as the A&E?
Mr. Lang, the government's credit worthiness at the two largest pharmaceutical companies in the country has been canceled for non-payment. The government owes major vendors for health services millions of dollars, and I say that without fear of contradiction. They are unable, through the PHA, to pay their bills. And since the contract with the construction company and contractor is through the PHA, they have been unable to consistently pay to have the renovations completed. And, while I am not casting any aspersions on the character of the minister, this minister has given multiple deadlines that have been missed as to the date of completion of accident emergency. And I would say categorically on air right now, today is the 19th of June, there is no way that A&E and PMH will be finished in 1 month. There is absolutely no chance.
Not in 1 month.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you how critical, like, what is being affected by that A&E not being completed?
You know, Mr. Lang, my good friend, may his soul rest in peace, Perry Gomez used to say, and I'll quote him, say, if you're poor and you're black, you can dead. Okay? There are people that have to go to Princess Margaret Hospital at Iran because they don't have a choice. And many of those people end up languishing in a crowded hallway with no bathrooms for days.
I heard one of those stories recently, actually, someone reporting on their family situation and said they had been in the waiting area for quite some time.
And so when you talk about the dollar amount required to complete accident and emergency, let's say it's $5 million. It's not that much, but let's say it's $5 million. We are aware of multiple projects around the country for roadworks for $180 million, eh?
180, 120, right. 52 billion.
Princess Margaret Hospital is the main health facility in the country. It is where most people go. If you are in any other island and you have a serious illness, you're transferred there. The Lord knows that we ought to keep the Princess Margaret Hospital in Iran functional. Okay? And so for me, this is more than just a change orders, et cetera. This is an issue of priorities. And what the message that Bahamians are getting, and I feel very strongly about this, is we don't really care. Because if we did care, this would be done. But it's not a priority. Because if it was a priority, we would put our money where our mouth is. If healthcare were a priority, we would pay NASA agencies and Lowe's, okay? We would pay the bill so that people could get medication. Mm-hmm. But no, we're not. We, the government of the Bahamas, are not paying those bills. Okay?
But
we would pay the vendors that provide
the government, services. But the government says it is collecting record numbers of dollars in revenue, record numbers of dollars in revenue. The government indicates it's going to have a surplus, and the government of the Bahamas is spending record numbers of dollars. So spending the monies that it's collecting, and how do you now say that people are owed for critical medication and A&E and them kind of things? How does that work?
I have in front of me a memorandum that I just received. Okay? Dated June 18th. And it says effective immediately.
Doc, check. I don't know. Let me just make sure. Producer, is that me or is that him? Because he's coming in staticky. Go ahead, Doc.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
Is that better?
Yes. It's better. Yeah, go ahead.
So this is a memo that I have just received literally 5 minutes ago that said challenges in the operating room. This is now the RAND that effective immediately we're in emergency mode, which basically means that elective surgery is canceled, that it'll be emergencies only. Now, we talked about ambulances and so on and so forth. If this government is so awash in money, then these things ought to get the priority.
But the government, okay? Now the government ain't saying it's awash the money, you know. Not, the government doesn't say that. The government says it has had record levels of revenue and they've been able to collect lots of revenue that were owed to the government. And so forth. So the government says that. I know that the government says it's been a wash of money, but it is collecting record levels of money.
So, okay. So let's be of language.
Right.
So if the government has collected record levels of revenue, then ought the government not prioritize those essential things that keep people safe, keep people healthy, ensure that people are educated, that protect our borders, etc., as a priority?
Yeah.
And then everything else follows.
And you know, this is why I say, and I say this to yourselves too in opposition, I prefer to be straight with the public, and I mean dead straight. If I'm having an issue, I prefer to say to the public I have an issue. If I am doing okay, I will say to the public I'm doing okay. Or if I'm doing okay over here but not over there, I prefer to say that. Because let me tell you what is incredulous. The government of the Bahamas has reduced the deficit of the Bahamas from over $1 billion in 2020. Over $1 billion in 2020. The debt to GDP ratio from almost 100% plus to 0.4% of GDP, less than $100 million, and projecting a surplus. It is hard to conceive in that circumstances that you can't finish your A&E or exactly. Pay your medical bill, your bill for medicine.
And so when these things exist and you walk into the hallways of accident and emergency, whether you do that in Grand Bahama or you do it in New Providence, and you see the dignity of human beings reduced because of the conditions, it creates an emotion.
But you are a former minister of health. You're a former minister of health. So you don't lay the absence of resources to finish A&E at the charge of the minister, right? Because I did the Ministry of Finance.
Y'all don't give yourself money. That, because I had challenges myself.
I remember you saying so.
And you may recall that I spoke to you about how to navigate those waters, eh? Now, what I am saying, however, is that the cabinet of the Bahamas, the Minister of Finance, and ultimately the first among equals ought to understand that this particular issue speaks volumes about the choices and also the character, I would go so far as to say, of the cabinet.
Let me ask you a question, Dr. Sands.
Yes.
Would you say that there are more than the resources required to pay for the completion of A&E and the medicines in our healthcare system? I remember you saying at one point that you needed $40 more million. Would you say that you need that kind of level, if not more, today for the health care system of the Bahamas?
Yes.
Okay. Just give me a number you would say would get us there. Just give me that number.
On annualized.
No. I'm talking about cap. I'm talking about monies to get you up to scratch, not the ongoing funding, but money to get you up to scratch.
That's the definition of scratch is complicated. I don't want to make this too complicated, but.
You take my lead and it will not be complicated. I'm asking you for a dollar amount. Is it $40 million, $50 million, $100
million? It's probably on the order of $100 million at
okay,
this
good,
point.
Good. Okay, good. Now, what I find challenging to accept is this. I could get a PPP for $120 million road project in one island, $180 million road project in another island. And for something as critical as health needs, care needs, I can't get a $100 million PPP. Since roads in the Bahamas produce no revenue for themselves. So the government of the Bahamas has to pay that money back. So it can't be an issue of revenue stream from the project. Why would I not be able to get a PPP to get $100 million worth of stuff done in an area where the public health is the issue?
I think you can, and it really is a matter of how much of a priority it is. Mm. And we are watching. We saw the gymnastics of the Minister of Health and Wellness about the rationalization of a $268 million ostensibly PPP for the creation of a standalone specialty facility. okay? But very little other than some general comments about addressing the legacy challenges at the facilities where most people have no choice but to...
Yeah, but he can't. But to be honest, he can't. Listen, man, I know the government system. He cannot do anything other than do what he's doing by saying what he's saying, because he is not the person who is capable of giving himself what he requires to get that job done.
Right. But he can be and ought to be a very vocal advocate to his colleagues to make the
case. but you don't know what he's saying in cabinet. You don't know that, because you know he don't, like you and others, you don't come out of cabinet and start telling people, I'm like trying to get the Minister of Finance to give me money, but he choking around.
So, you know, we listen to the utterances of the Prime Minister in his role as Prime Minister. We ask, what are the priorities?
Yeah.
Okay. Any civil society in trying to advocate for the people of the Bahamas ought to say that, you know, we ought to and could do better. You know,
yeah, I think we have recently
outsourced a number of services to other countries, and we thank them for their assistance, okay? But there are some implicit serious issues about post-op care that have arisen from those services. When these people return to the Bahamas, or when the people that provided that care leave, who is going to take care of these people?
Okay, now when we're going to take a break, we're going to take our final break, Doc, but to your question, in office, what would you do? And not only in that particular instance, but in other instances we want to turn your attention to. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, after this final break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Bridge, 302-2361.
Winning on the court, just like investing, is about consistency and having the right partner. With RF's Advantage Plus brokerage account, you get exclusive access to high return securities, some yielding up to 7%, plus expert investment guidance. No need to chase every opportunity. We deliver priority trading, exclusive investments, and the lowest commissions, so you can focus on what matters most. Sign up for an RF Advantage Plus brokerage account today at rfgroup.com. RF Bank and Trust. Money at work.
Looking for insurance that fits your lifestyle and your budget? At Star General Insurance, we've got you covered. Whether it's motor insurance with flexible options for third-party liability and comprehensive coverage, or commercial insurance products that protect your business, we have choices you can afford. Own a home or renting? Our home insurance products have just what you need. And for the adventurers out there, we offer marine insurance too. Visit our website or social media pages for contact information and quotes. Star General, insurance made simple.
This is CEO 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
way. So starting today, I'm breaking out of this cage.
I'm standing up, I'ma face my demons. I'm manning up, I'ma hold my ground. I've had enough, now I'm so fed up. Time to put my life back together
back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join me for these remaining moments of the show where we are speaking with Dr. Dwayne Sands, the chairman of the Free National Movement. We've been talking about the budget and some other things. Dr. Sands, before we left off, I was asking you in the circumstance that you last mentioned, what would you do? What would you do?
Well, I think, first of all, this project needs to be brought to complete in an emergency. We need to commit that come what may, certainly the emergency and pre-hospital services across the country will be not only brought up to speed, staffed, but maintained. I think that investment will reap phenomenal benefits for the country. The leader and I agree that elimination of user fees at the time of service. Someone shows up to ask an emergency, injured, sick, having a stroke, heart attack, etc. Asking them for $10 or $20 makes absolutely no sense. I think it is time for us to move beyond that point. And then finally, I think we have talked about the aspiration of making catastrophic coverage through national health insurance a reality. That time has come and passed, and we will make that happen. I think it is all of the work that has been done through Pricewaterhouse, through the work of the National Health Insurance Authority, both during this administration and the former administration, has shown us that it is not only viable, it is doable, and it's doable now. And I think we can make a phenomenal difference given the horrible health demographics that we have in this country. One thing that the leader decided to do was to give some meat so that people could touch and feel what a Pintard-led administration would be like. I was proud as a Bahamian. I was proud yesterday to listen to him, not only point out the problems, but to give the solutions. Every single problem that he pointed out, he gave a solution. And this is what we will do. And this is how we will do it. And this is why we will do it. And, don't mind the people standing up to give some the occasional points of order. I think that even the government members of parliament were captivated. They were mesmerized by that contribution. Hello?
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand.
We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
come take my hand.
We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
I agree with you in observations made. I'm going to take some time next week to go through the presentation made by the leader of the opposition, because I thought it was interesting, and I thought there are some things in it. It would be interesting to get some feedback from the Bahamian public on. We're going to be plumb out of time. Doctor, thank you very much for providing very clear and honest assessments and answers to my question. And we got to have you come back. I want you all to know that when I'm asked to whether somebody is available to speak or to share, I'm available to do that. And so if you in the Progressive want to call and ask, and I'm happy to have the chairman on or some other representative of the party. Thank you very much, Dr. Sands. We appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much. And thank you to your listening audience for listening.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us. God spares life. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. Do well.
Come take my hand. Come take my hand.